Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for May 10th, 2016. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be talking with Alexandra Newton and Rudolf Tanzi about mutations in protein kinase C alpha that promote the type of neural defects that characterize Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is a progressive neurodegenerative disorder that initially causes problems like memory loss, but it progresses to cause more severe cognitive problems and eventually death. Alzheimer's disease is characterized by the degeneration of synapses, which are the points of contact between neurons. Amyloid beta accumulates in the neurons of Alzheimer's patients, and experiments in mice have shown that accumulation of amyloid beta causes synaptic degeneration. Amyloid beta accumulation also causes synaptic depression, which is a weakening of neural responses over time. A group led by Roberto Malino, Rudolf Tanzi, and Alexandra Newton has found that protein kinase C alpha is required for amyloid beta-induced synaptic depression in mice, and they've identified mutations in protein kinase C alpha that are associated with a familial form of Alzheimer's. Newton spoke to me from the University of California, San Diego, and Tanzi from Harvard Medical School. Dr. Newton and Dr. Tanzi, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here also.
What made you look to see whether protein kinase C alpha, or PKC alpha, was involved in the sort of synaptic depression that's associated with Alzheimer's disease?
Well, you know, it's been known for a while from multiple labs, and I would say first and foremost from Roberto Malino's lab, that one of the effects of A-beta is that it's released in high amounts during glutamatergic excitation of the synapse. And as A-beta is released into the synapse, it's also released together with metals like zinc that induce it to aggregate into oligomers. And A-beta oligomers, in turn, can cause the internalization, the endocytosis of NMDA receptors and AMPA receptors. This has also been shown by Paul Greengard's lab, also by Dennis Selko's lab. So it's pretty fairly established that, you know, A-beta is produced and released into the synapse almost as a feedback mechanism so the excitation doesn't go too far. And when A-beta accumulates to a high enough level, the oligomers induce long-term depression. They impair long-term potentiation by inducing the internalization of NMDAR and the AMPA receptor. So there's a thought that if you have a toxic gain of function of too much A-beta in the synapse, that this will lead to excessive long-term depression. And over time, synaptic degeneration, the synapse will actually start to break down and you start to see tangle formation in the neuron. So this has been a pretty hot topic. So Roberto set out to find genes that would potentiate or suppress the ability of A-beta to induce long-term depression, and came up with a list. And Roberto and I are both funded by a foundation, and so is Alexandra, the Cure Alzheimer's Fund, where we have a system where if our investigators find interesting genes, no matter what they are, they can come to me, and I have a petabyte of whole genome sequencing data from over 400 families, from Alzheimer's cases and control brains, a huge database of whole genome sequencing data. So any gene of interest, I can look through and see if there are any interesting variants in those genes that look like they're functional variants, for example, in the coding region, that segregate with Alzheimer's disease. These could be, you know, very rare cases of inherited Alzheimer's. So Roberto came to me with a list of genes that he found, and some were actually making A-beta more potent at inducing long-term depression. Some were actually blocking the ability of A-beta to do so, and they asked me to look at them. And when I did that, I noticed that the protein kinase C, PKC alpha gene, had some really interesting variants that suggested that they would have an impact on protein function. So we shared these mutations, and that's what led basically to this genetic slash functional study. Alexandra, would you like to add?
Yes, so I got called into that picture because of our expertise in protein kinase C. But to go back a step, I believe the Malino lab had also shown that a scaffold for protein. I see this protein PIC1. In mice lacking PIC1, A-beta no longer causes synaptic depression. So that was a clue that maybe protein IC might be involved, hence the addition of that to that list of genes that Rudy Tanzi looked up. So we saw that these were rare variants that are in very key places on protein IC that it made sense that they might be impacting the function.
So when you went looking at the PKC alpha gene in your Alzheimer's families, what did you see?
Well, we found a number of different interesting variants, but three of them were interesting in that they were amino acid changes and they were segregating with Alzheimer's disease. So all three were extremely rare. One of them hadn't even been seen before. Two others had been seen just in one or two people in the 1,000 genomes, whole genomes project. So they're very rare, but they were segregating with the affected individuals of several Alzheimer's families, but very, very rare. And then Roberto said, well, we need a PKC alpha expert to look at these mutations and say, how do they affect function, and enter the collaboration Alexandra.
How do those variants of PKC alpha, the variants that you found in your Alzheimer's families, affect PKC activity?
So that's where it became really interesting to us from the PKC perspective. We had done a previous study showing that PKC, which is frequently mutated in cancer, these are all mutations that either are inert or that are mostly loss of function. But we looked at these mutations in these Alzheimer's families, and they were actually enhancing the activity. They were gain-of-function mutations. So these were the first out of many, many, many mutations that we had looked at in disease that were actually enhancing the activity of the enzyme.
How do those variants of PKC alpha affect amyloid beta-dependent synaptic depression?
Yeah, so that's an important question. And what the Malino lab found is that you actually need PKC alpha for synaptic depression induced by A-beta. And they showed this by looking at mice lacking PKC alpha. These mice were resistant to this A-beta-induced synaptic depression. They also used PKC inhibitors to show that A-beta no longer had these synaptic depressive effects. So we knew from the data from the Malino lab that A-beta is somehow promoting these effects. And so now, by having these mutations that are enhancing the activity of PKC, these effects of A-beta are probably exaggerated and also enhanced.
Now that we know that PKC alpha is important for amyloid beta-dependent synaptic depression, is it a potential target for therapies to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease or prevent it?
So there have actually been a lot of inhibitors of protein IC in clinical trials for cancer, and they have pretty much uniformly failed. And the reason for that is actually you need to enhance the activity of protein IC to be protective from cancer. And we only realized that very recently. But now we have this arsenal of inhibitors that were used in these clinical trials for cancer and failed, which could be repurposed now for Alzheimer's disease because they've already gone through phase 1, phase 2 clinical trials. And so they're pretty much ready to now be used for a disease where, in fact, you want to inhibit protein high C.
Do the opposing effects of PKC alpha in these two diseases, Alzheimer's and cancer, suggest that either inhibiting PKC in Alzheimer's patients might make them more susceptible to developing cancer, or conversely, that restoring PKC alpha in cancer patients might make them more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease?
So that's another good question. And before I answer that, I just want to stress the point that having exactly the correct amount of protein IC in the cell is really important for cellular homeostasis. And if you have too much or too little, you get these very different pathophysiologies, a degeneration one or a proliferation survival one. Now, in cancer, it turns out that all of the PKCs are mutated. There are 9 different isozymes. But in Alzheimer's, it's just one of them, protein IC alpha. And not only is it just one of them, it's one of them when it's bound to a particular protein scaffold. So it's a very small population and a very specific population of PKC. So that allows us then to very specifically target that PKC bound to that particular scaffold. So the ability then to have the specificity might go around this more general problem that you mentioned, that you must have the correctly balanced amount of PKC, not enough, bad, not too much is also bad. But if we can just go after that one species of that one PKC, PKC alpha on that one scaffold, that might be a way to get around that.
So you mentioned that there are PKC inhibitors that have been tested as cancer therapies. Are any of those specifically targeting PKC alpha?
So the inhibitors that have been in clinical trials are pretty broad inhibitors. They're not specific for PKC alpha and certainly not for PKC alpha on this protein scaffold. I will mention that one of the inhibitors that failed in the cancer trials is this molecule of briostatin that causes the loss of PKCs. And that one actually is having very favorable results in clinical trials for Alzheimer's disease.
Would it be possible to develop more inhibitors that would be specific to PKC alpha or the form of PKC alpha that's bound to the particular scaffold that's involved in the Alzheimer's phenotype?
Yes, absolutely. There are small molecules that will inhibit the binding of ligands to the scaffold for PKC alpha, this protein PIK1. And so that would be a very good target right there.
This is the first time that something like this was done, where functional studies suggested a gene that had not been implicated in Alzheimer's, and then, thanks to the growing number of databases of whole genome sequencing, like the ones we have, that the gene of interest for a functional study could be interrogated genetically, and then we found mutations that we would have never found because we wouldn't have looked at this gene. These are too rare to see association in large genome studies. But because, you know, a collaborator saw a gene of interest and asked us to look, we found these mutations, and then they turn out to make sense with how they might contribute to Alzheimer's disease at the level of gain of function. So this paper kind of sets a precedent for being more aggressive about looking at genes beyond those that have already been published as Alzheimer's genes by interrogating whole genome databases.
Clearly, this isn't a causative mutation in the majority of Alzheimer's cases.
So I think enhanced PKC activity may generally be associated with Alzheimer's. And this enhanced activity can occur because of these rare variants that Rudy found, but it could also occur because there's many, many ways to affect the activity of PKC. There are proteins that affect its stability and how long it sits around in the cell. And there was a really interesting unbiased mass spec analysis that came out a few months ago showing that the signaling pathway that was most elevated in postmortem brains of Alzheimer's was PKC. So PKC substrates were the ones whose phosphorylation change was the biggest.
So even Alzheimer's patients who may not have mutations in PKC alpha may have increased PKC alpha activity.
Absolutely, yeah. His sequencing stuff brought us to this protein that we would probably not have looked at otherwise. And now we look at that and it's like, whoa, it's not just that there are these rare variants in these families, but in Alzheimer's disease in general, these signaling pathways have gone awry, resulting in this amplified enhanced PKC signaling.
Rudy and Alexandra, thanks for speaking with me.
It's been a pleasure.
You're very welcome.
That was Alexandra Newton and Rudolf Tanzi discussing a paper published in the May 10th issue of Science Signaling by Alfonso and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and thanks for listening.